This is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by Anderson, Agostino & Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Agostino & Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Welcome to the latest Irish Illustrated Insider podcast. Pete Sampson, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley back in room 1208 of the Rosen Plaza. After Notre Dame's dramatic 21-17 win over LSU in the Music City Bowl, we're doing a late night podcast post-bowl game because we're sort of splitting up to travel back to South Bend, and you didn't want to wait for the next podcast.
And who knows when we'll get back together again.
And the game was just that good. There was that much to talk about. I don't even know where we want to start, but I'm going to start with something I'm going to write about in my column, and I sort of hinted this at our last podcast. I do think Notre Dame's coaching staff, I'm not going to say it's as good as it's ever been, but it's as good as it's ever been in the BK era. And I think for the first time, when we were talking to players after the game, and they mentioned, wow, you know, like we had a lot of extra time to prepare, that Notre Dame can take advantage of that with Elko in terms of schemes and misdirections, and Long in terms of preparing two quarterbacks in a way that I just don't think they have in the past. And I feel like today was a real compliment, maybe less so for the head coach than it was his staff, because they were able to take a lot of backup scout team players on offense, and, you know, kind of a defense that lacks ability at the safety position, and put together a winning performance against a team that went 9-3 out of the SEC and LSU.
I think that's a fair assessment, and I think at times, once you know, like LSU would get rolling, they when they'd string a couple good plays together, that's when they became a little bit more difficult to defend and diagnose. But, you know, a lot of the time, you know, they weren't able to get into all the creativity, I think, that Matt Canada wants to do. But on occasion we saw it, and Darius Geis, you know, here it is 5 minutes going to game, we got to turn in our MVP vote. And I'm saying, you know, Coney looks like the best player on the field. Julian Love almost always does. But Darius Geis had the numbers, 2 touchdowns, 98 yards rushing. Let's see, at that point he had 3 catches, 24 yards receiving. It looked like they were about to go in the end zone, take the lead, so we turned it in. And then they kind of who made that decision that Boykin was MVP? I mean, it's kind of like a quick decision on the field to stick Boykin up there with all the captains on the dais. But we all thought that Ian Book deserved it, and he did. I mean, he did a great job. He came in, and it was a winning performance following a performance that didn't look like it was going to be a winning one from Brandon Wimbush.
I think, you know, the offense found a way. Winning performance is a good way of putting it, because you used your backup quarterback, your first, fourth, fifth, and distant receivers. You're missing your second-best tight end. They had to find a way against the second-best defense they played this year. It's a really good defense. I think if LSU had a little bit better offense, it would have been tougher, but credit Notre Dame's defense for playing well all game long. They wore down at the end. It's not their fault they wore down at the end. They're out there for, 38 minutes. You could see them playing. You could see them giving ground that last drive. Yet, they stopped them and held them to a field goal, which allowed the win.
Because Tavon Coney never gets tired.
No, apparently not. He is. I can't think of a more improved player, because he went from, I don't know what he really brings to the equation, and that's what the coaches felt, to he is, you said the words today, against the run, he's Manti Te'o.
That was a Manti Te'o-like performance.
And he had a great game. Julian Love has had several playmaking great games. Got a lot of credit to the defense for those two goal line stands for holding up, and for the offense for finding a way. And Ian Book, look, they had 4 first downs, I believe, 5 first downs and 98 total yards before Book took over for basically the second half and the last drive of the first half. He had 9 first downs, just his arm and legs alone. Played a very efficient game, 1 terrible pass, but as Pete made a point in instant analysis, he bounced back from that terrible pass and actually had a really good fourth quarter.
Yeah, one of the things I said going into the game, a couple things. I mean, number one, we knew LSU was giving up less than 53% completion rate. And how is Brandon Wimbush going to succeed when he completes 49%, and that's without Stepherson, Mack, Claypool. Well, you have Ian Book, who's throwing to those backup receivers that he probably gets more reps with, you know, in practice and pregame and stuff like that. So it worked out. It was very improbable, obviously. You know, everybody said after the game that Miles Boykin regularly makes catches like that in practice. I think if he regularly did that, he would be playing more, would he not?
Yeah. Yeah, there was definitely some creative license taken after the game about, well, Miles Boykin is just dominating people in practice every day. And, of course, we thought Ian Book could do this. You know, it's talking to people around Notre Dame throughout the year, you get more of a, I think, a nuance when we all get this, like, opinion about who's can play and who can't or who's not performing. And Ian Book was not a guy that the coaching staff, I felt like, had a whole lot of faith in to deliver this kind of performance. And, you know, got into a discussion on our message board about this, about, like, well, why don't they rotate Ian Book? And the reason was that Ian Book had given them no reason to rotate. After today, he has. But in the same way that Tavon Coney was not somebody that was thought of very highly by the coaching staff when the season started, I think Ian Book is probably somebody who was not thought of very highly by the coaching staff when the bowl season started. And opinions change. They have to evolve. That's what's great about college football, that these kids or players surprise you. Ian Book was a surprise.
I mean, to follow your point, Pete, I think the coaching staff sees more of those terrible interceptions, you know,
right,
we saw one today.
Well, and we saw one in North Carolina when he had a chance to start. So
right,
it's not
exactly
out of the character for
him. Yeah, at the point of that interception, he was averaging in the third quarter, which was a bad pick. He was averaging one pick for every 16 pass attempts. Mm. Which is like, you just can't live that way.
Yeah, you can't.
But, you know, I have to give him a massive amount of credit for bouncing back to finish. I believe 9-11 for 111 yards and 2 touchdown passes. And to put that in context, Notre Dame had thrown 1 touchdown pass in the fourth quarter all year, and Ian Book threw 2 today.
Oh, wow.
That's incredible.
And honestly, I didn't notice it live, but Miles Boykin mentioned that Ian Book put that ball the only place he could put it. Now, it was an amazing catch, but it was over the outside shoulder.
Yeah.
And Miles Boykin just kept with one hand. It was actually the right throw.
Yeah, you watch that play. Miles Boykin looks like he's 6'8".
Yeah, he looks like a superhuman, but the ball was not poorly thrown either. Yeah. It was obviously a remarkable catch.
I'm not, and again, I don't see all the bad interceptions or bad plays that we know the coaching staff sees, but I'm more surprised by Miles Boykin's amazing play to stay on his feet, to break out of a tackle of John Battle, who's a quality safety. I'm more surprised by that than Ian Book coming through like he did. Now, he did it against, as you said, Tim. I mean, it's a good defense. It's probably the second best defense that they've faced, and that's impressive. When I watch Ian Book, I like the body language. I like the mechanics. I like the way he carries himself. I like the way he bounces up after a play. There's just a body language about him that I think inspires some confidence. I mean, I hope I'm not reading too much into that, but I think he has that. And as you said, it's whether you want it to be wide open or not, or whether Brian Kelly wants to still favor Brandon Wimbush, he's got to open that. He's got to open the competition up.
If you think of it, look, LSU played 13 games this year, and in 10 of them, the other team didn't throw for more than 200 yards. And one of the teams that did only did because they threw 3 picks and threw it 50 times, where you have to throw for more than 200 yards. Ian Book was able to hit that number today in 3 quarters. Or no, 2 quarters and 1 series,
basically. 2 and a
half, basically. Yeah. 2 and a half, because I guess he played a little bit before that. And they ran the ball well enough when it's sack adjusted. 182 yards rushing on, was it, 29 carries. So that's 5.7 yards a carry against an LSU defense that doesn't give up that kind of rushing yards.
Right. No, Book had 64 yards rushing on 11.
Not including seven
carries, and then he had 4 sacks for 36 yards and loss.
It seemed like they scuffled all day, but really they just scuffled for a half. It was a decent second half of football.
God, that was an ugly first half of football.
It was an amazingly...
Yeah. At halftime, it's like,
Scuffle is generous.
Yeah, if Notre Dame, even if Notre Dame wins this, like if they win 6-3 or 10-3 or whatever, Notre Dame fans are not going to be happy with this, and I'm sure there are those that are
Still not.
Because they're always unhappy, but because of the spectacular, because of two things. One, because of what Book did. Two, because a couple goal line stands, and then three, the spectacular play to win it. It changes the perception of the game. But, man, at halftime, that was some ugly football.
Yeah, it was interesting to think back to what Brian Kelly said yesterday. Feels like a long time ago, the day before the game, when you know he sort of intimated, you know, the results of bowl games are a little bit overrated. And I think for the most part, this game did feel like a one-off to me. Like it felt divorced from the regular season in a lot of ways. And it's not going to feel married to next season either.
That's how I feel.
Because of Nelson and McGlinchey are leaving. But it without question, it colors the entire offseason for Notre Dame.
I got Kelly to admit that after the game, contrary to what he said the other day.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations where I feel like if you're Notre Dame, I don't know if this is something you actually can build on, but it's sort of, it's a 10-win season, which they should finish in the top 10 for only the second time of the Kelly era. You know, two 10-win seasons in 3 years. There's a lot of good that I think will come out of this for Notre Dame, but it's amazing to me how much of that hinged on Miles Moikin making a ridiculous catch over his shoulder and then having two LSU defenders sort of bounce off of him.
I think a lot of games, I agree with you on that one, and we kind of talked to some coaches post-game that were exuberant about the victory, but a lot of games do pin on hinge on something like that,
some were
right?
exuberant and others were...
Angrily exuberant.
We're a bit raise-your-eyebrow surprised at how they won.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question that there were surprises for Notre Dame today, as much as I think Brian Kelly often is reluctant to say he was surprised by anything. That's just sort of his nature.
I think that's by coach's nature because they're working 100 hours a week
right.
to suggest that something surprises
them. Yeah, there's a connotation there of unpreparedness.
Yeah. He has seen Boykin make that play in the past. Not every day, as he insinuated, but he has seen that play made. So he figured, it's not shocking. And I asked him all the players. Look, they ended the game with a touchdown pass to Michael Young, a diving catch by Chris Fink, and a circus catch for Miles Boykin, all from Ian Book for the win. They all kind of smiled and thought, I believe in those guys. And Drew Tranquil gave me that's kind of amazing, huh? Yeah. It's an honest answer. I know they believe in him. Julian Love told me the two best players in practice were Miles Boykin and Michael Young. And the first thing he said to me when he saw me was, I told you. But it's still kind of shocking that that's how they won the game. And it's okay to be shocked that's how they win the game. You can't always win the game according to pattern.
Right. You know, Brian Kelly, remember what he talked about, how they were going to have to throw the ball outside and have success. You can't count on Brandon Wimbush to do that. But with Ian Book, you can. He can roll. He can run off the roll. He can throw on the run. And we saw a lot of evidence of that. They did a little bit of the screen game, which you can't do with Wimbush.
The designated screen passer at the beginning. I've never seen it.
Yeah, exactly. and, you know, I mean, early on, remember the crossing route by St. Brown that where he had a ton of room to run. It would have been a third down conversion. And he throws it behind him, partly because EQ's not very flexible either. But you just can't, you know, you just can't build on that. And, you know, I'm the first one to defend Brandon Wimbush, 30 touchdowns.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Brian Kelly used that number after the game. You know, red zone offense, 75% touchdown percentage, 21st in the country in scoring. I mean, you have to give him credit for that. But the problem is his shortcomings put a ceiling on his ability and the team's ability. And I don't know that Notre Dame has to live with that any longer.
They refuse to live with that any longer.
I think they chose that today in the second half by sticking with Book. But I want to give Notre Dame fans and everybody here these numbers and tell me what you think the final score of the game is. LSU gets basically 400 yards. Josh Adams carries 15 times and averages 2.9 yards. Brandon Wimbush is 3 for 8 passing, and Equanimeous St. Brown has 2 catches.
In a game where you're minus 2 in turnover margin.
Right, that too.
And 2 turnovers.
15 minutes.
And minus your best receiver and your second or your third best receiver and another tight end. And they convert more than half of their third downs.
Well,
you lose that game 40 to 10.
You have two goal line stands.
Yeah.
It's, well, what, how do you compensate?
But that's how you do it. It's a competitive effort by the
You've
team.
You've got two missed chip shot field goals by LSU.
They're bad kickers, though.
You have two Yes, they're bad kickers.
They're bad kickers.
Yeah, LSU's fault.
That is LSU's fault. Notre Dame's got a bad quarterback. It's not their LSU's fault that Wimbush can't throw, right?
Two long field goals by Justin Yoon, who had a quietly had a really, really good year.
Finished 8 of 9 on field goals. His only miss was a 50-yarder against Wake Forest.
I was holding my ballot for a Justin Yoon game-winning field goal at one point for the MVP of the game.
If he kicks the game winner,
the minute. I mean, that game gets away a little bit if he doesn't make his field goals.
You know, Julian Love, I mean, my God, is he great. He is just,
five, two of them.
Yeah, I mean, we all enjoy having conversations with him, and I think we each had a separate conversation with him after the game, and mine was about, you know, he said he's always kind of had a chip on his shoulder, the whole three-star thing, and confidence in his ability, and I said, how do you... You know, he does such a great job of anticipating what the receiver is going to do. Now, you know, that takes great technique. It takes a fairly high degree of athleticism, but also film study. Well, then he says to me, you know, he basically says the other corners have more time for film study because when he's not in football, he wants to tend to academics. And so they kind of have to yank him into the film room to study the opponent at times. So, I mean, the guy is really, really gifted, and he doesn't necessarily have to put in more time than everybody else in the film room.
That's a pretty interesting guy. I thought that I'm going to give a nod to a five-star guy, Quentin Nelson, because I talked to him after the game. Mostly I wanted to ask him about the two-point conversion that Josh Adams had where he just drove a dude almost out of the end zone entirely. And then also there was a choke slam sit on your face block in the first half, and he really enjoyed both of those. And when I asked him about him, he was like, oh yeah, I remember those plays.
You mean he cracked a smile?
Yeah, he cracked a smile. But it was interesting talking to him about the notion of, somebody asked on our message board about him not playing today for draft stock, and he's just like,
that's so unlike
that. Not only is that insane, like, I wanted today to be my best game to be also be my last game. And he felt like he accomplished that, which you rarely hear, I think, Quentin Nelson or any of the offensive linemen sort of stick their chest out a little bit and say, like, yeah, I played great today. Quentin Nelson feasted on LSU's linebackers. And that was something that we talked about in our podcast before the game, is that some of the injuries LSU's had at the linebacker in the second level had the potential to really hurt them today. It's something that Ed Orgeron talked about in his pre-press conference. And I thought that not only did Notre Dame's pulling guards and sometimes pulling tackles, Mike McGlinchey was on the move a little bit today, eat up LSU's second-level defenders, but the Brandon Wimbush to Ian Book transition, I think in some ways helped Notre Dame because LSU was like, well, this guy is not going to run it nearly as effectively as Brandon Wimbush, which is, to be fair to both quarterbacks, he is not as effective as a runner in terms of explosive athletic ability, but in terms of efficiency in the read option, you could argue that actually better.
And I sometimes quicker and more decisive in making the decision to keep it. There was one example of that. Was that the 21-yard run?
Yes, he was. He had gobbled up 6 yards before I realized they were running design
before
draw.
Before you realized he still had the football, right? So, you know, it's little things like that. That's how you compensate for not being as big, for not having a strong arm, for not running 40 as well.
Goes back to the Julian Love point.
Right, exactly. And that's why I said to you today, Tim, do not count out Houston Griffith as a corner, because I see a lot of great technique, and we see time and again corners like Julian Love, whose technique is so good, it can compensate for 4.6 or whatever he might run in a 40.
Yeah, it certainly plays a lot faster.
Yes. Well, I don't know exactly what it is, but
he plays great. He's down there like he is a punt coverage and kick, or especially punt coverage maven. He is all over. Whenever there's a play made, it's always like, that's Julian Love again. I mean, kudos to him. We had Notre Dame officials coming over to us. He's their best defensive player. Maybe it's him. Maybe it's Tavon Coney. They are two very good players. We talked to Tavon Coney after the game. He is 100% noncommittal about the fact that the NFL exists, and he's going to figure it out if there's a professional league that he could go play in after this game is over. So he did not give us any answers. We didn't talk to EQ after the game due to the two catches and Boykin's breakout performance. but nor Josh Adams, who.
Or Jerry Tillery,
who Josh Adams just had such a rough end to the year. I don't know what he is going to do now, but they definitely trust Josh Adams more than they trust their other running backs.
Yeah, I mean, the running back position was interesting today. Adams' lack of production. Dexter Williams, no-show until the fourth quarter, or the third quarter of the fourth quarter.
Until the 31-yard game?
Until he flipped off 36 yards in about 35 seconds. Yeah,
that gave you, it validated your frustration about why he's not playing.
And then he missed a block for a second.
And then it made it clear why, also, he's not playing. So he had a 5-yard run, a 31-yard run, and then was totally lost.
Devin White.
Yeah, in a blitz pickup rush perspective that Ian Book got blown up for, maybe a 13-yard loss. It's maddening. It's frustrating. I get all that. Ultimately, I think the staff has to do a better job of figuring out how to use him. Yeah. Also, Dexter Williams needs to take some accountability for, I need to figure out how to pick up guys who are rushing at the quarterback.
Yeah, but to me, everybody in the stadium knows certain plays that Josh Adams is going to carry the football. So why can't everybody know that with Dexter Williams? Hell with the pass block. Put him in. Hand him the football.
I literally tweeted out, maybe Dexter Williams should run the ball and other people should block. Because Dexter Williams is a talented running back. They have to find a way. It's not all in the staff. He cannot run with injuries. It's pretty clear.
Right. And he's right. It's up to Dexter Williams to impress them to get on the field.
It'd be one thing if he was a freshman.
Right.
Yeah.
He's a junior.
Yeah.
Come on, man. You got to know that stuff by now. And for one reason or the other, he doesn't. But I do want to spin the podcast forward a little bit in terms of what we saw today. You may be listening to this tomorrow probably because it's almost midnight. But what we saw in the Citrus Bowl that you think is applicable to next year, what we saw in the Citrus Bowl that is more in the one-off type of situation.
My one-off is the offense almost completely. When you lose Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey, I don't know if Ian Book is going to be making plays next year, if Brandon Wimbush is going to win the job, or if they're both going to end up playing and they're going to cede the role after three losses to another quarterback, because I don't know what you're going to get from the offense next year. We talked about this about a month ago. I don't believe the offense is going to be better next year. I think it'll be better than it was in November, but I don't think they're going to score 58 touchdowns and run for the second most yards since 1991, or third most yards since 1991. I don't see that happening. Now, they're going to have to pass the ball better, of course. I think the defense, this is a jump. The defense will make a huge jump next year because by default, they're going to be better at safety. They can't not be.
Well, you cannot run on that point.
They're not going to run those guys.
You cannot run Jalen Elliott out there again next year. I
don't think you'll run any of the safeties you saw today other than Jenmark Heath out there after September.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if you looked at the top. If you listed Notre Dame safeties next year, 1 through 5, Elliott and Coleman were 4 and 5.
I agree.
I think they could drop that far.
I mean, we talk about Notre Dame's not willing to put up anymore with Brandon Wimbush the same has to be true at safety.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I think we're at quarterback, they have felt like they had another option. Aside from Jordan Genmark-Heath maybe getting, 15 plays in the game and was fairly physical about it. I don't think that they felt like they had another option out there. It's certainly not in the way that they did at quarterback.
Don't you feel if Tillery and Coney come back, you saw a lot of what you'll see defensively?
Yeah.
This is a good front seven next year and good corners.
If those two come back and MTA enters the starting lineup in place of Jonathan Bonner, I don't know how much he played today, actually.
He was out there quite a bit, I believe.
Was he? I definitely think the defense gets better next year. And I agree with what you're saying about the offense. How in the world are you going to replicate 75% touchdown rate in the red zone? Yeah. I mean, that's not going to happen again. But overall, more efficiency, less bad plays, less bad decisions.
Yes, you can change it up and find a way. I was doing more of a look at what they accomplished, and I know they fell flat on their face, but you're not going to see 2 months of 49-49, 38-49, 49-40. It was a remarkable run they had. They have to be better than November, because otherwise they're going to have a terrible year. They're going to be better offensively than they were in November next year. But I don't think they're going to approach what we saw in October again offensively.
They don't get to open with Temple again.
No. I mean, I think one of the things with that next year is they should be better in November than early in the year, because most of their skill players, I think, will be quite young. Yeah. And they'll have to grow into the season. So I don't think it's an offense that's going to hit the ground running the way it did this season. Yeah, I think in terms of what they can build on for next year, offensively, even finding individual pieces, I think I would have a difficult time.
Michael Young will be involved.
Michael Young and Miles Boykin clearly are the big winners. Ian Book is a winner in the sense that he's in the conversation in a way that I don't think he would have been if Brandon Wimbush played well today. I mean, if Brandon Wimbush played well today, we would be talking about Phil Jakovic. We wouldn't be talking about Ian Book.
Good point.
In some ways, I feel like Ian Book unseated Phil Jakovic in the quarterback competition for next year.
I don't want to come off with our instant analysis after the game and this, so we're, Brandon Wimbush could never play again and that Ian Book should be the quarterback.
He couldn't have had a worse day for his offseason. Right. Wimbush. That's just the way I'm looking at it. He couldn't have had a worse day for his offseason. But his offseason was always going to have to be a work in progress. If Brandon Wimbush was 10 of 20 today and ran for 3 touchdowns without a pick and didn't throw very well, he still would have to improve in the offseason.
But now
it wouldn't matter.
But now it's way worse.
Yes. Now it couldn't have been worse. Really, he got benched and they won the game without him.
There was not going to, if the 10 of 23 rushing touchdown game, there would be no drumbeat for somebody else.
Right.
Now I think in some ways there's a drumbeat for somebody else's, because you got Book and Jakovic being potential options at some point. Because I think that Jerkovic's outlook was a good year would be to win the number two job.
Right.
Now I think that's harder to do. So I don't really know how that, but I agree, O'Malley, with your point about what can they take from today to build on for next year. I do think the front seven, if Coney and Tillery are back with Tranquil, if there's a Khalid Kareem, Julian Okwara, Dalen Hayes, all in their junior year, they all should make a pretty big jump. Myron Tungavailoa, Mosa, with Tillery, does Jay Hayes maybe move inside where he can get a little bit more production? I do think the Coney, Tranquil, if they're both inside, that would be a pretty athletic group. Then you got to get something out of the new Rover position, right, whoever it is. But the front seven and corner, I feel like they showed what they can be a little bit against LSU. The safety position just needs to be torn down, and they need to start over.
Something we talked about, guys that need to be more productive. Jay Hayes, for one, because, Jay Hayes goes...
Well, Dalen Hayes as well.
And Dalen Hayes would be the second one. Those guys have to be more productive than they are. And, I think there's a good chance that they will be. That's just the evolution of a defense. I have more confidence that Dalen Hayes is going to be more productive. I think that's interesting, Pete, for you to say move Jay Hayes inside.
Jay Hayes made all of his big plays in September this year. Literally, he made one against USC, I guess, but it was Jay Hayes in September, looked like a player, and then it just can't remember the plays happening.
Yeah.
It was a strange, I really thought he was coming on. Obviously, he still could, but Khalid Kareem took over for a reason. It wasn't just because they were trying to rotate him in. He was taking Jay Hayes' snaps after a while, and he played plenty today.
Let me just say this about Phil Jakovic, and somebody questioned how I listed the order of
he had him one
recruits.
Over the other two guys.
I had him third.
Jakovic. Offensively, though, first, right? Was he number one offense, maybe?
No, I had I have Kevin Austin.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And I have Derek Ellen ahead of him. So it's like, well, why is that? Because we don't know how it translates to the college. You can throw for, I don't care how many tens of thousands of yards you throw in high school. That's more see the guy hit the guy.
Brandon Wimbush won a state championship in high school. Brandon Wimbush completed
70%
of his passes in high
school. That's like see the ball, hit the ball. That's like see the man open, throw him the football. Yeah. It's not that easy on the next level. You have to read everything. I'm not saying Phil Jakovic can't do it. I'm saying I don't know whether he can, and I'm not sure anybody does, because the learning curve is so great when you move up to that next level.
Didn't Brandon Wimbush say to you, Pete, I kind of like this going against man-to-man and having to beat somebody outside. It's like in high school or not reading everything.
I don't know if he said that to me.
He said it to someone. Okay. he mentioned that, yeah, we got to win some outside one-on-ones. It's kind of like back in high school where you're just trying to beat someone and not reading the whole thing out. I mean, that's the...
Well, yeah, he loves
that. I don't want to hear that. That's not what you want to hear. I understand that's true, but...
What he said to me during the week is I was talking about the reset of no game plan, just work on your fundamentals. And he's like, yeah, you're not trying to read a defense and figure out what they're doing. Like, you can just go out there and, you know, throw the ball around like you're in seventh grade. Well, like, that doesn't really cut it at this level. And in Priester, you're right. It's like, what happens when Dracovic gets here? Does he have the same, does he have some mental
I'm not saying he can't. I'm just saying we don't know for sure.
I think that
plenty of top 10 quarterbacks that don't, is right. what you're saying.
I don't know Dracovic personally. I do think he has some kind of like dude qualities about him. I think Ian Book maybe has a little bit of that too, whereas I think Brandon Wimbush is kind of an overthinker. And things weighed on him a little bit. So we'll see. I think Dracovic is at least going to get a look. I take Brian Kelly at his word on National Signing Day. And I know the staff is super high on Phil, and they won't be afraid to play him if they need to next year. But Ian Book will at least give them more to think about now.
I'd put Petit Freer ahead of Dracovic will fall to fourth. But I mean, what Pete's saying is
add that, five more guys, let them fall to ninth. Right, There's no problem. What do we know?
What Pete is saying is very valid about Dracovic. Could they're very high on him. And
The August start or the summer start is hard. It's difficult for me to believe he would to win it right away. I mean, obviously, you have to lose games though to have him. Like, is the problem.
Yeah. What we had heard from the last staff behind the scenes was that Wimbush was better than Golson or Zaire. Well. Or Kaiser, even. Well, obviously, that was not true.
He's better than Zaire.
Yeah, but not 3-for-3.
No.
So it's I'm going to be fascinated to see how that all develops. Brian Kelly was asked about, hey, do you have a starting quarterback for next year? Which is like kind of one of those questions that you have to ask.
I had to ask that.
Yeah, yes. Okay, you asked it. Yeah. It's like you got to ask it even though it's like it's an unanswerable question.
It doesn't matter what his answer is. The question has to be
asked. His answer is going to be, I don't know, and that's fine. Yeah. But I don't know is different than where it was before the game started.
Right. Has there been any point this season where he would have answered it that way? Right. He would have said, Brandon Wimbush is my starting quarterback.
Yeah. So,
of course, Ian Book wouldn't have been sitting at the dais with him.
Yeah, it was a little bit different there. I
was going to bring up the point that the 10 wins is huge because, Pete, you made a good point in incident analysis. They finished the season correctly. 10 wins.
Got what they deserve.
January 1st bowl game. I know it wasn't a major bowl, but it's the next one. Beating a quality team in LSU, a team that was in the top 12 to start the season and was fine all year. 9-4 with that ending would have felt terrible. 10-3 feels good. I don't think... We did a quick look. There's 26 teams that won 10 games this year out of 128 teams. So you're 20%, more than 20% of teams
Brian Kelly
are going to win 10 games or have won 10 games this year. Let's not throw a parade for the 10 games, but it's a lot better than 9-4. It's a lot better way to end the year.
Well, it is a benchmark for Notre Dame. It's not enough for Alabama
and
or
some
Clemson
teams
played
terrible schedules compared to Notre Dame.
Hell, it's not enough for Wisconsin.
No, but a lot of teams, not Wisconsin, but a lot of Wisconsin and other teams did not play Notre Dame's schedule, so 10 wins can be hollow.
Right.
But it's a good effort. I think if you said 10-3 when they were 8-1 going down to Miami, you'd think, oh, gosh. But now the reality is... Well, it ended up probably being beginning of the year 10-3. Nobody would have said I can't have a 10-3 season when Notre Dame beats LSU in a January 1st bowl, right?
Notre Dame's won 10 games 2 of the last 3 years, which ho hum. If 26 teams won 10 games this year, then there's that many more that have won 2 out of 3. But at Notre Dame, it hasn't happened since 92-93 when they won double digits back then.
And I think the 26 teams winning 10 games, how many of them played 14 games?
Sure. Oh, yeah, there's plenty. Probably there's a lot. Well, USC is one of them, just to point it out right there. USC played 14 games.
Yeah.
I mean, there's enough teams. Yeah, I'm just saying it's a great job by Notre Dame, especially with their schedule. It's not unique to win 10 games. Mm-hmm. It's unique to go 11-2, and Notre Dame needs to do that soon.
Yeah,
no, that's going to change your perception. That's going to change Brian Kelly's
standing.
That's a significant step up. Yes.
I know it's just one game, but
it is a significant step up.
Yeah, well, how many teams won 11 this year, though?
14, I think.
Okay, yeah, but again, there's another 14 game part applies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they open next year with a very reeling Michigan team that just completely lost the plot all of a sudden.
I wish they were playing Michigan next week.
Yeah.
The reset button's been hit.
Yeah.
But they lost a captain today. We didn't talk about that either. I guess it doesn't matter. It's his last game. He played fine.
But I think we all felt the same thing when all the captains and Boykin are up on the stage after the game, but not Niles Morgan. And look, you don't lose your captaincy for being 15 minutes late for curfew. Right. It was either multiple things or something a little bit more serious. But he played. He was in the third play of the game, right?
Yeah, he was in. He was in early.
Play, and he played a lot. He did a lot of good things.
Well, he made a stop at the goal line on the first goal line stand. He and Jameer Jones, who we all had in the pool as the guy that made the biggest play of the first half. But they did. That was
Jameer there. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Jonathan Jones also made a big play.
Yes, he did.
So that's another thing that's not going to carry over. Niles Morgan played his last game, won his last game, and we're never going to figure out. They're never going to announce officially what happened there. But it was strange to see six guys on the stage with Miles Boykin and not have your seventh captain up there. It was a bit of an odd look. I actually felt bad for Niles Morgan, not knowing what he did, that he wasn't allowed to stand on the stage with the captains. That's rough.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. I think we all kind of felt like, damn, can't you let him be up there? But we don't know exactly what he did. And hey, to be fair, Matt Freeman from ISD was the first one that suggested to
us. He's the reason we were using binoculars to look for a C on Niles Morgan's chest is the best way to put it.
Could have missed that entirely. I think the what carries over aspect of it, aside from the coaching staff stays together, I think that something McGlinchey said, because I wanted to ask him about this after the game, and he said that in some ways, I feel like Mike McGlinchey gets Notre Dame better than like some people who actually work at Notre Dame professionally.
Oh, God.
But this is a quote to me. It says, I talked to Coach Kelly about this. The way you win is with people. I feel as though we have the best now. I feel we lost a little bit of that previously, and that's what gave us some hard times. We got the right people leading the team. They're bringing in the right people to play for the team. And the amount of work that you're going to put in here while you're here, it's going to translate into success. Notre Dame attracts the best and the brightest. The same for coaches as well. And I think that going back to signing day and some of the prospects they have coming in there and some of the changes that they've made in the recruiting department, I do think there's been an acknowledgement by Brian Kelly and the staff that throwing good money after bad is not a way to win. Like in the whole, like, you don't win with talent, you win with the traits and the character and smart and tough and grit and all that stuff. But
as cliche as that is, it's true.
It's true. Yeah. And I think today sort of proved that, both in terms of the guys who played when they, you know, in some ways didn't have to, McGlinchey and Nelson, because they were going to be millionaires in about 6 months. Some of the guys that didn't play as big a role as maybe they thought they deserved, Niles Morgan. Some of the guys that didn't play at all, like Stefferson and Isaiah Mack. So I do think that this year is at least a marker that Brian Kelly can look back and it's like, you know what? I can stick to my guns on something about playing the guys that I think deserve to play and are doing it the right way, opposed to playing the guys that are just naturally, automatically the best. That's something that can carry.
Here's something that fired me up in pregame, because, you know, we tweet out, we report about having the captaincy removed from Niles Morgan, and we see a tweet saying, Brian Kelly's lost control of the team.
I thought it was an indication of having control of the team.
Right. Exactly. It's the opposite.
And probably making just the completely right decision where, you know what, you did not live up to the standards of captaincy that I set forth for you, but you didn't do something where I'm going to punish the rest of the team by not involving you in this game against LSU's running game. Get out there and play. You're not going to starve, kid.
He had enough in the bank.
Yeah, exactly. He never heard anything else of Niles Morgan where there was going to be this massive, he's always been the guy that, when he wasn't playing, Brian Kelly called him a bulldog wanting to play. So, yeah, I think it's the opposite. I don't think Brian Kelly lost this team down here. I know it's a bad look that you had three suspensions, or two suspensions, a captaincy strip, and another guy sent home. Yeah. But I'm not trying to
excuse anything, but December's a bad month for football players because and I'm not saying, because Notre Dame is different. I believe in it. I've always believed in it when I went there, growing up. But you're still, to sound like Brian Kelly, you're dealing with 18 to 22-year-olds, and December's a bad month. It's when bad things happen because they do have too much time on their hands, and it strikes Notre Dame, and it strikes everybody, not because, you know, some schools are less lax and have lower standards. It's because the age group, I mean, that is, I could, if I was a college, I was a baseball player, if I was a college football player, my ass would have gotten in trouble in December. I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it.
Tim Priester wouldn't have been suiting up for the Liberty Bowl.
Yeah, no, it's like somebody who is like, when are these suspensions going to stop? I don't know, like when teenagers stop being teenagers. Like, I think that, you know, in the context of Miles Boykin making the catch and Ian Book delivering and the defense stepping up and having a couple goal line stands, that Brian Kelly's decisions to send guys home, suspend guys, take the captaincy away, shows that he has more control over the team, yeah, not less. And I think,
and he's holding them to a higher standard and actually abiding by what he's talking about with the trades.
Yeah. When's the last time anybody won a bowl game over LSU and was mad that the coach sent people home for sticking? I was 13 years old. I wanted to kill Lou Holtz when he sent home Ricky Waters and Tony Brooks. What are you doing, dude? Yeah. But they won the game, so he's a genius. If they lose the game, you blew it.
No, he's not losing control. In fact, it was a great year for Brian Kelly. It really was. Now, it wasn't a great November, but when you consider, you know, kind of reevaluating himself and how he should approach it and listening to his upperclassmen and revamping the coaching staff and allowing, you know, well, first of all, finding Mike Elko and allowing him to run his defense the way, I mean, the guy really, he knows what he's doing. And that defense, I mean, you know, we talk about, okay, the front seven's going to come back. Mike Elko's going to come back. That alone will make them that much better.
I think, to wrap it up for me, it's a satisfying quality win over a good team that allows Notre Dame's fans, coaching staff, and players to have an off season that isn't just miserable the entire time. That's losing with your backup quarterback going to this off season.
Right, and so you would have no hope. When neither, they both stink.
Yeah, it's a fine position for Notre Dame to be in because I think they can genuinely sell that things are in a good place and moving in a good direction. And that is something that's similar to the last time they beat LSU in the Music City Bowl, where you could, the reasons were different and the look was different. That was like, hey, they could win the national title next year. I think for Notre Dame, it's like they could probably go 10-2 again. But Notre Dame is in a good position right now. Their staff is coming back. They've got a lot of talent coming back. I think they've got some good incoming guys that can impact them, especially on the edges.
At place, linebacker and safety at places where they
need
help.
Wide receiver, they need help. Linebacker, they need help. Safety, they need help. Particularly safety and wide receiver, I think those are where young guys can help the most. But there's just, I think in the same, a similar way to every move Brian Kelly made last offseason, I described as like, all right, I'm interested in seeing what happens here. I think with what they have coming back and the momentum they built off beating LSU, even though McGlinchey and Nelson are out the door and they lose Niles Morgan and Greer Martini, they certainly lose some veteran talent. There's still a lot to be intrigued about for Notre Dame in 2018, probably in some ways more so than when this game started. Maybe even more so than if Brandon Wimbush had gone out and done the 10 of 20 for 112 yards and had three rushing touchdowns. There's some interesting pieces for year two of Bayless, year two of Long, year two of Elko. And, you know, based on my conversation with Brian Kelly in the week where he's going to be around winter workouts again, like it doesn't sound like it's going to be a one-off situation where he sort of learned his lesson about how he needs to be more of a, not a CEO head coach, but more a sort of nuts and bolts, roll your sleeves up head coach.
I think it fits him. Doesn't it feel
comfortable? Well, I thought that's what he was when he was in charge of absolutely every aspect of everything in Grand Valley State, Central Michigan, and Cincinnati. That's what he would be. I know you can't quite be that in Notre Dame, but you can be in charge of a lot of the football operations that are going on. It seems like that is where he would thrive. I just am upset with him because I don't want to do an offensive practice report with two quarterbacks all spring.
Yeah. It's going to have to be that way. Now, he also, you know, the calm, cool Brian Kelly was not in evidence a whole lot.
Ask Isaiah Robertson. And that's
yeah, like, it wasn't perfect. Well, it certainly wasn't perfect. There was not a great Notre Dame game. It was a victory.
He's a head coach. He's entitled to do that. Now, you don't want to do it all the time because then they will tune you out, and that's what had been happening in previous years. You got to pick your spots. And but today was a big day, and he could say what he wants about, you know, bowl game and the importance. And I really think that was a little bit misconstrued because he was talking about as it relates to your next season.
Yeah, that's
fair. And I get what he's saying there because, like he said, 2011 they lost Florida State. Next year they played for the national title. It didn't come off sounding like that. And unfortunately, many times, I think what he means, it doesn't come off sounding right, and therefore it gets judged that way.
Well, I think that's a wrap for our post-Citrus Bowl near midnight podcast.
Think we have time to figure out the starting quarterback for next year?
We have many podcasts to come. We'll be back January 8th, next Monday. I think we'll probably have a regular weekly Monday podcast through the off season.
At least through
the end of the recruiting session on February 7th is the next National Signing Day, the late period. So until then, signing off from room 1208.
Yes.
Tim O'Malley, Tim Priester, I'm Pete Sampson. Thanks for listening.
Hook, coverage on the end. Caught! What a grab! Barkin, still on his feet! Happy New Year!